Well, good morning. Today begins our summer series, The Great and Precious Promises of God. Over the next several weeks, we will look at promises of God from both the Old Testament as well as the New Testament. And each week, I'll be joined by a different member of the preaching team over the next several weeks, because at Centerpoint, we have multiple people who are part of this preaching team. I will be joined by Nate McKenna, Steve Bergstrom, Andy Howard, Vince Willis. Each week, we'll dive into a particular promise of God to unfold the gifts that he gives his children. Because in a political season, we're not lack of promises. We have only to turn on the news, and we'll see advertisements, we'll hear in debates, all sorts of promises coming our way. That promises, politically, are nothing more than really a carrot at the end of the stick that we would follow to get what they want. Now, some politicians will have goals of actually accomplishing those. Others use them only as a ploy to obtain votes, to obtain people in their corner to get what they want. Herbert Hoover, when he ran for president, said, "A chicken in every pot and a car in every garage." But a year later, America entered into the Great Depression, and that promise remained unfulfilled. FDR, when he entered office, said, "I'm going to bring a balanced budget." And yet his New Deal sunk our American deficit further and further and further. A little bit more recently, we have George Bush Sr., who promised, "Read my lips, no new taxes." And yet he was unable to fulfill that promise, and it likely caused him the next election. See, we're not short of promises. That politically, we know that those promises are there to obtain certain ends, that there's kind of a necessity to those political promises. We know they promise it to get these things, and so we may or may not expect them to actually do it. But when it comes to God, we recognize that he's not running for election. He's not running for re-election, that there's nothing that obligates him to give promises to his people. There's nothing he is trying to subversively, selfishly gain by giving us promises. That his promises aren't carrots at the end of the stick to try to get us to do certain things. He's unprovoked in giving his promises to us. And so our question for today is, why would God give promises to his people? Why, if there's nothing that obligates God to give promises to his people, why would he do this? And this morning, as we begin this series, I want to move us and get us into the Goodyear blimp. Because I wanted to get us high to be able to see the big picture of God's promises. So that as we zoom in over the next several weeks, we can have this framework, we can have this big picture of what are God's promises for? Why would he do this? And we're going to see that God's purposes, God's promises are mirrors and they are means. They're mirrors and they are means. So if you would, turn with me in your Bible to 2 Peter chapter 1. We're going to be in 2 Peter chapter 1. Looking at verses 3 and 4. And in the promises of God, that he is unprovoked to give us these promises. So why? Why does he give us these promises? The first thing that we're going to see today is that God's promises reveal who he is. God's promises reveal who he is. Beginning in verse 3, we're going to look at through the first part of verse 4. His divine power has granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness, through the knowledge of him who called us by his own glory and excellence, by which he has granted to us his precious and very great promises. Notice a few of the characteristics here. For his divine power, he is in control. He is the one who provides the ability to do these things. That he is in sovereign control. He is in sovereign power over all things. That he, his divine power has granted to us. That word granted is used in verse 3 and it's used in verse 4. Because when we think of God, at least for me, one of the things that I often don't think about is God's generosity. But that's not often one of the things that I think about. Maybe I often have this view, and maybe you do as well, that God's kind of stingy with us. That God's just kind of stingy. He gives a little bit here. He gives a little bit there. He wants to give just enough, but not too much. But no, he has granted to us. James reminds us that every good and perfect gift comes from above, from the Father of whom there is no shadow or shifting of change. That he is constant, he is good, he is generous. And notice the expansiveness of his generosity. For his divine power has granted to us all things, everything. He's not on a budget here with his promises. He's not trying to cap what he gives to his people. He gives all things. There are no minimum wage promises with God. That what God does is in abundance, is in surplus in everything he does. He isn't a stingy God holding out on his people. Because this is who his promises are directed towards. They're to us. They are to his people. They are to those who have, by grace through faith in Jesus Christ, accepted the salvation offered in him and him alone. That it is those who have been called in, who have been brought into God's family, of whom he showers forth his generosity upon them through Jesus Christ. Because it is in Jesus, of whom all of these blessings come through to us, that God is powerful. God is generous. He is expansive in all that he does. And we continue to grow in this through the knowledge of him who called us. This knowledge isn't just this intellectual, okay, great, God's powerful, he's good, he's generous. All of those things are true, and that's a starting point. But it comes from this relationship. This knowledge is one of which we have been brought into, that he has called us, that God in his grace has brought us into his family, and we know him as a father. He knows us as his children. And it is God who in his power and in his grace has lavished on us great and precious promises. How? By his glory and his excellence. Because everything that God does is glorious. Everything that God does is excellent. It is supreme. It is not lacking. It is praiseworthy of everything that God does and everything he touches, because everything he does flows from who he is. God never acts independently of who he is. And his promises reveal who he is. That his promises are great and precious. That precious is the idea of it's valuable. That it's used sometimes of jewelry. That it's precious, it's valuable. You don't just use them just nilly-willy, all of those good things. They're special. They have value. There's meaning to them. That they are great because everything that God does is great. Because it comes from who he is. And so as we go through this summer in this series, in each promise we look at, there is going to be an opportunity for us to see a little bit more clearly of who God is. Because his promises reveal who God is. Sounds good, right? Because this is going to be a great series that we go through and we continue to develop. We continue to see God in his beauty. That God's promises are mirrors to behold his beauty. And that's what we're going to be doing this summer. Is we're going to be looking into this mirror, see God more and more clearly, to see him in his goodness, to see him in his generosity, to see him in his grace, that we would marvel and that we would worship. That's just one of the ways in which God's promises come to us, that why he would give us his promises. And yet, when we think about promises, we think about maybe abstract things. We talk about, okay, great, I'm gonna get a clearer picture of God. That's great, and that's really going to help my intellect, but promises don't really mean anything to me. Sure, it's always helpful to get to know God more, to have a better picture of him, but for the most part, like, I've kind of got this thing. Like, at least this is how I've been going through the Christian life up until a couple of years ago. That it carries with it this idea of, you know what, like, God's told me what to do. He saved me. He's done his part. So now I'm supposed to do my part. That these promises, yeah, they tell me who God is. They remind me of his grace and his mercy and his love, his generosity. But in the words of one radio commentator, he said, I believe in an afterlife. I believe that there's life after death. But God's told me what to do. And I don't expect anything from God in the meantime. And it's this type of thinking that we can, if we're not careful, we can grab hold of. It's this idea that we can just pull ourselves up by our bootstrap. But my fear as Texans who value independence, who value this idea of I'm going to do it and no one else is going to help me, no one else is going to do this, that we've worn out our bootstraps. That we have progressively gone through this Christian life, that we have tried to do it all on our own. And it is in these promises, it's not just to give us a clear picture of God. It is to transform us now to realize all of the resources God has given to us now. Because God's promises are not only mirrors to behold his beauty. God's promises are the means by which he makes us holy. That God's promises are the means by which he makes us holy. Do you notice everything that was connected to God's person here is for the purpose of, verse 3, for life and godliness. That he demonstrates his power, he demonstrates his generosity for the purpose of making us more and more like Christ. And what we're going to continue to see as we look at these promises of God is that we are not alone. God has not told us, just be holy. That's where I want you to go. Now start. He didn't just tell us where to go and what to do. He has given us everything along the way to pursue life, to pursue godliness. One of my professors would say, what God's grace demands, God's grace provides. That if he has called us as his people to live holy lives, to live godly lives in this world, then he provides everything that is necessary along the way. And it is this that we will continue to see unfold as we behold the promises of God. They're not only means, they're not only mirrors to behold God's beauty, they are means by which God is going to use to make us more and more like Christ. Because notice that this is what he's saying. That verse 4, by which he granted to us his precious and very great promises, so that through them you may become partakers of the divine nature. This divine nature isn't that we somehow become a god. It doesn't mean we become godlike in his kind of eternality, his all-knowingness, his all-powerfulness. It is that we reflect what God has revealed in his promises. It means that we become like God in the sense of we reflect his character. That in God's promises, we see his character, we see what he is like, and by all of his provision through his promises in Jesus Christ, now we reflect those in our own life. That we see God for who he is in these promises. And as we walk in these promises, as we walk in the provision that God brings to us, that others would then see what God is like as well. that he has provided everything, all things for life, for godliness, so that through them you may become partakers of the divine nature. Because when we believe, we are united to Christ. We are united to him in the fullness that our relationship with him begins now and will last for eternity. This is what is ours. That God hasn't merely just said, be holy as I'm holy. Now figure it out. Do it. Try harder. Pray more. All of these good things. Get involved in church. All of these good things. That all of that comes from this security of knowing that God has provided everything for life, for godliness. So in our call to be holy, we recognize that God has made provision for all that we need to walk in those ways. He isn't telling us to just, if we try a little bit harder, then maybe he'd love us a little bit more. He isn't telling us if we'd pray a little bit more, then maybe we'd get more gifts from him. I've been thinking about it. It's like going to the grocery store and getting all of these different things of fruits and vegetables and maybe meat and flour and all of these things and coming home only to realize we had it all to begin with. That we have all of these resources. We have all of these promises, all of God's provision for walking in holiness now. And what our prayer in the preaching team has been is that we would unfold and delight in God's gifts. To recognize and to see all of what God has given to us through Jesus. Because it's in there that we not only see a clearer picture of God, it is through them of which God will make us holy. And notice in the context of where this holiness plays out. The end of verse 4. Said, and so that through them you may become partakers of the divine nature, having escaped from the corruption that is in the world because of sinful desire. It's here that in the midst of this corrupt, sin-filled world that we are to live out this calling. It's not an escape from the world. It's not that we leave the world. It is that we escape from the corruption that is in the world. Because we are people who have been bought with Christ's blood. We have been brought into God's family where corruption, where sin is no longer what defines us. That we are to pursue by God's promises for life and godliness. We are not to go back into corruption, to our sinful desires, to give back into what our life was like. He says, no, I've provided everything so that you can move in the direction to become more and more like Christ. But can I be honest? It's really hard. Because it's not only the world that's full of corruption, full of sinful desires. It's in me. It's in us. That as much as we want to escape the corruption that's in the world, we can't escape it from our own hearts. That we could get a cabin and go to some far off place and get away from the seemingly world and the corruption that's there. But it was already waiting for us. It came with us when we went there. That can grow challenging and we can grow despaired that, you know what, there's just so much corruption, there's so much evil that persists in our world. And God continues to remind us in his promises that he has made provision for us. Through his promises to provide for us that would lead toward life and godliness. It doesn't mean there aren't challenges. It doesn't mean that we might not grow discouraged at times. But it does mean, and as we look through, we'll see all of God's promises for his people to make them more and more like Jesus. And it is in this context of this world that is full of corruption, the world that's full of sin and evil, that he says, I'm here and I'm with you and I've provided. I'm going to be with you every step along the way. Because God's promises not only give us a clear picture of who he is, They not only give us the picture to see what God has provided to make us holy in the present, God's promises provide the means by which he gives us hope for the future. God's promises are the means by which he gives us hope for the future. Because as we continue to look in the world, as we continue to look in our lives, it is a constant, ongoing battle and challenge. Sometimes it seems like we're doing well, and other times it just feels like we just are not going well at all. That the world continues to seemingly spiral down and down and down. That all of these things continue to move forward. But what God's promises do is they're not only to promise us that he has made provision for us now in our holiness, he is giving us a picture and promises that are yet to come. Because he is giving us hope that future will all of this will be restored. That there is coming a day when our struggle with sin and our progressiveness and holiness will be complete. That we will not only become a little like Christ, a little more like Christ, a little bit more like Christ. Now we have a setback, that it will be fully complete, that we will reflect the person of Jesus Christ in our life for eternity with him. That's what he promises us. Because it's to get us beyond the present. Because when we look at the present world, we can grow discouraged and we can grow faint-hearted. But he has not only made provision for the present, he is giving us a picture of the future in his promises that will sustain our hope. Because we know that our frail and ailing bodies will one day be restored and resurrected. That we know the corruption and the sin that's at play in our world will one day be renewed and restored. That there will no longer be this fight, that the wars will end, the decay will cease, death will be done, and there will be life, and there will be renewal, and there will be joy unending. And so it is through God's promises that he sustains and calls us to persevere in holiness now, in light of all that awaits his people. Because God's promises are not only means for our present holiness, they're not only means to provide hope for the future, they continue to give us this more and more clear picture of who God is. So how do we respond to all of this? How do we respond in light of all of God's promises? One of the things I want to challenge us from the beginning as we go through is that we would delight in the great and precious promises of God. Delight in God's great and precious promises. Because God's promises aren't the carrot at the end of the stick leading us, coaxing us along to do certain things. He is inviting us to come to the table and to partake, to enjoy, to delight in what he has given to his people. Definition that I came up with as I was studying and preparing for today of God's promises, that God's promises are his unprovoked generosity towards his people for their present holiness and future hope. God's promises are his unprovoked generosity towards his people for their present holiness and their future hope. That God is inviting us to come to the table to enjoy, to partake, to take delight in all that he has given to his people. It's like if we went to Great Wolf Lodge or any other resort, you don't go to just check in and sit in the lobby and look at the fountains. You go to go into, to partake, to delight, to go down the slides, to go on the golf course, to go to the spa, to take delight in all that awaits us there. And we are moving from the lobby. We are moving into to partake, to delight, to enjoy all that God has given to us through his great and precious promises. So I think that there are some ways that we can begin to do this as we go through this summer. One of those is to ask questions of each sermon in this series. This is the first one. Again, we're in the Goodyear blimp, so we're getting the big picture here. One of the first questions to ask is, So how does this promise show me who God is? Of each sermon we hear, we can ask questions, and the first one being, how does this promise show me who God is? How does it reveal what God is like? As we look at certain promises, some of them will be more clear than others. Other times it might be a little bit more difficult, but in each one we'll see just a facet of God's beauty as we look at his promises. The second question we can ask is, how does this promise make me holy? How is God continuing to show up and make provision for making us more and more like Jesus Christ? That he is on mission to make us more and more like Jesus Christ. And his promises are the means by which he does that. The third question we can ask is simply, how does this promise provide hope for the future? How does this promise provide hope for the future? Not every sermons in this series will have maybe answer all three of those. Some will maybe answer two or three, maybe even just one. Because God's promises, they give us that clear picture of who he is. They remind us that he's provided everything for life and godliness now. And he has provided hope for us in the future through his promises. And one of the things, again, since this is the very first one, that I want to challenge us as a community of faith as we go through these promises, to recognize the resources that God has given to us. That we wouldn't go and try to do all of these things just because we didn't realize we had them to begin with. That memorizing and meditating on Scripture is one way in which we can remind ourselves of what God has given to us. As we leave today, you'll have the opportunity to take home today's text, to have the opportunity to remind ourselves of God's divine power, that he has granted to us everything pertaining to life and godliness. That it is to move us along to have a clear picture of who God is, to see his provision for holiness, to see the provision he provides for hope of the future. And memorizing and meditating on Scripture is one way in which we can continue to delight in God's great and precious promises. Would you join me in doing that this summer? Of taking delight in God's great and precious promise as we zoom in and as we look at particular promises that he is inviting us to move in, to delight, to partake, to recognize what he has given to us through his Son, Jesus Christ. This is what we are going to be looking at this summer, the great and precious promises of God.